country. I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent. The people of this country do not want oligarchy. They do not want authoritarianism. And they want a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%. Thank you all very much.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Talking about the environment and climate change really hits home with many people. Tune into KBOO on April 22nd at 6 p.m. for Four Walls for Us All. Join us in an exploration of safe, affordable housing, policy, and the passion to go beyond typical solutions to climate change. Learn how to feel more connected and empowered to protect Mother Earth and our fellow human beings in a way that's accessible to everyone. You won't want to miss it. That's Four Walls for Us All on April 22nd at 6 p.m. only on KBOO.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Game.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and playing tactically because someone took all the wood before you could get it. That's a callback, James. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. Had a long, tiring week, but I'm doing okay. You want to say something about this?
I do want to say something about this. So this is actually the second time our guest, which we'll get to in a moment, but Tim Nakayama, Diablo, and I'll just say welcome to you, Tim.
Hello.
This is the second time we've done this. We did a pre-record, just in case, and in that I had said James wasn't able to come, and I had said that he just couldn't make time for you, the listener.
And I just had a big family crisis, but I'm all glad that we can all just sit around and joke about it. That's how good friends we are, Nate.
That is how good friends we are. As a reminder, this is a reminder to myself, now we can do this. You can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system. Just click on the Chat With Us button in the lower right corner of the window. So, as I mentioned, we're here with Tim Nakayama, a.k.a. Diablo. Probably just say Diablo the whole rest of the time,
sure.
But I always go back and forth in my mind
either
on
works.
That one. He's the host of the KBOO show, The Sacred Circle Temenos. Diablo is engaged in a different area of board gaming, of the board gaming hobby than I am. He's into miniature gaming and plays in tournaments. He also runs his own charity tournaments, one of which is coming up next month, the Battle for Ukandu, or Ukandu, Star Wars X-Wing Benefit Tournament at the Portland Game Store on May 24th, 2025. Welcome to the show, Diablo.
Glad to be here. I'm so happy that we have the show like this down here at KBOO, talking about games, which is one of my passions.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right, so Before we get actually into the meat of the things, when I was making up the run sheet last night, I realized your show is called The Sacred Circle, Temenos, and there's a concept in board gaming and gaming in general called the Magic Circle. Are either of you familiar with the Magic Circle?
I feel like we might have mentioned it on the show, but I cannot remember if we have.
It might come up in D&D when you are casting a spell, but I don't know otherwise than that.
Yeah, well, it does come up in D&D. It's basically the unspoken, unwritten contract that players engage with, that like whatever happens in the game happens within the game, and like when you get out of the game, you know, it doesn't carry forward. So if you get attacked, it's like nothing personal, but it's also the buy-in that like you are here to play this game, you are going to immerse yourself in the game, you're not going to like be pulling out your phone and disengaging, you are going to like commit with your friends and you know, try your best and just kind of have a good time with everyone within the construct of these rules.
I break the phone rule all the time.
Yeah, I was about to say.
It's the top 10. I saw the top 10 gamer faux pas, you know, almost like pizza fingers on the cards, or, you know, riffle shuffy these cards and stuff. And phone was a big one.
This is going to sidetrack us so much. I do not understand the riffle shuffing deal at all. Like, I don't care. Riffle shuffle my cards. I just don't care.
Bend the cards?
I don't know. I side shuffle my cards. I sleeve them.
Yeah.
But I was at a gaming event with a bunch of friends, and they're all riffle shuffling, and I'm just like horrified.
Yeah, that's the one where you like bend them back, go,
yeah,
and then, yeah. That's a cool little ASMR for the audience, yeah, there.
Yeah. Putting them to sleep.
All right. Why don't you take the first question, James?
So we did the Magic Circle. As we always like to do, how we usually start the shows is ask, how did you get into the hobby?
Yeah, a hobby is interesting because it was just kind of a pastime when I was younger. You'd get the games for Christmas, you know, Yahtzee or Monopoly, or and then I gravitated towards Risk because it had some more complexity to it. And there was a store down the street from us in Hollywood, the Hollywood District. I lived by Grant High School. It was the Military Corner, and it was like a real hobby shop. And that's where they had D&D in the early 80s, and a lot of wargaming, which I wasn't into at that time. But that's how I first started doing it. I always loved getting games, and I think I mentioned this before, but I had a paper route, and I'd spend my money that I earned on the paper route to pay my sister Molly to play Risk with me, because she was so boring for her, but I just loved it, Risk, and I wanted someone to play with, so I used to pay her to play.
How much money do you think you wound up giving to her?
Well, this is 1970s, 80s money, so I think if we calculated it up, it'd be thousands of dollars in 2020,
you know,
2025
nice,
money.
Nice you could have subsidized her youth a little bit. Yeah. I think that's very kind. And how did you find your current gaming group, or any gaming groups, really?
Yeah, I mentioned this before also, but like one was that I had a daughter, right? And so when she's little, we played all the little kid games, you know, Don't Break the Ice, Ants in the Pants, Mousetrap, those kind of games, Hi-Ho Cheerio. And she loved Scooby-Doo, so they had a little more complex games with Scooby-Doo games. And then she actually got me into X-Wing. She saw this video, and it was comparing X-Wing to a Star Trek game, and she's like, Dad, this is so much better than this one, because it has, the models are better painted, the scale is more accurate, all these different things. And I'm like, no, I don't want to get into the miniature gaming, I can't do that, you know. And then it was on sale, I bought it, and then I bought another ship, the Millennium Falcon, which is on sale at PAL's, and then just started looking online, because I wanted to play this game. We played on our kitchen table, didn't really love it at that point, but I love Star Wars, so I'm like, okay. And just Googled it, you know, and found Guardian Games had a day. And I went down there and played and just fell in love with the game. And the community was great. And then I reached out to the Portland Game Store. They had a league night. I'm like, oh, league night. Can I just come watch? Like, no, it's just more casual. Come play. So now I play board games with all these people. And I play D&D with a couple groups of people that I met there. So, online. The digital world coming into the physical world.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like, did you have, I know for some people it's kind of hard to get over that initial hump of like going to a group of strangers to play a game with them. Did you have any reservations about trying that, or was it hard for you to just make that first step?
Yeah, I'm pretty extroverted, but I was still shy. I kind of was like stepping back and kind of watching and standing to the side, and they invited me. And I even have that when I go to Portland Game Store has a Dice and Drinks event on every Saturday. And I'll go and I'm like, oh, can I join these people or can I ask these people? And I just found the X-Wing community to be incredibly friendly and welcoming. And I try to carry that forward from that point. Yeah, this is like almost 10 years ago.
Awesome.
So before we dive deeper into what miniature gaming actually is, could you give us maybe what your favorite game is or a game everyone should try to get started in this hobby?
Yeah, I would say X-Wing initially, but X-Wing got sunsetted by Atomic Mass Games. They inherited it from Fantasy Flight Games. And it's just the production was so high for them to do, and they just got swamped with having too many games. They also do Star Wars Legion, Star Wars Shatterpoint, and Marvel Crisis Protocol. And then they also got Star Wars Armada, and they sunsetted both those games, Armada and X-Wing. So I would say X-Wing, it's challenging because the game has been sunset. It's hard to get, but we were talking about this before earlier. Unlike all the games that are coming up with tariffs and stuff, you can print these at home, you can print the cards at home, and you can just do it all at home now. So it's all made in the USA, printed in your living room and at the library, whatever. But the game that I would say everyone should get to, it's the pinnacle. I was talking to my friend Devin last night, Twilight Imperium. It is such an amazing game. I just love this game. I don't play it nearly enough.
It would be hard to play it a lot.
There's a group locally that plays it every single Monday. And I'm like blown away. I'm like, I wish I had Mondays off.
Yeah. Why don't you describe Twilight Imperium a little bit?
Twilight Imperium is kind of like what they call a 4X, where you go out and explore and expand. I don't know what one of them is X, one is exterminate, and you try to take over, but it has all these different layers of rules and different ways to get victory points. A lot of secret stuff. You can kind of king make someone in that game. You can hold up the old hub world, Mechatol Rex, you know, and you get extra points. And you're always doing something in that game, right? Even when it's not your turn. A lot of games you kind of sit there and go, oh, when is it my turn? You know, D&D, it's not your turn. Somebody's just sitting there for half an hour plus at the big campaign or a lot of players. But this game, you're always involved every single turn, which I love.
And when you say it takes a while, I know people who have taken, I think, like 12 hours for one game of it. You just kind of plan your whole day around it, or maybe even a whole retreat, a whole weekend.
Yeah, I have some friends that do this geekend, and they go to the coast, and they set it up like on Thursday night, and they start playing all day Friday. And we've done that a couple times where we kind of talk about it ahead of time. We show up first thing in the morning, we plan a couple meals. I think 13 hours, you know, including two meals. So it's a long day, but it's so worth it. And the day just flies by. I'm always blown away. Like, oh, everyone's like, that's a long day. I'm like, it flies by because you're always engaged.
Is like 12 hours like the regular normal amount for that game? Or is that like an extended?
I was watching Shut Up and Sit Down or one of those shows, and they were saying that 8 hours, but I'm like, oh, that's conservative.
Yeah, and it depends. If you're in that group that plays every Monday and you're not bringing in new people all the time, you can probably pound it out in like 4 to 6 hours, I would imagine. Like, I do know some people who play it as an evening game instead of an all-day game. But if you're trying to welcome more people to it, I think you're definitely going to have to add at least an hour per person.
I guess it depends on if you're like chatting around the table at certain times or how deep into the game you are.
Yeah. And Diablo, going back to X-Wing real quick, because it has been sunset, I know I've seen like stores sort of liquidating their stock. Have we passed the point of stores trying to get rid of their old X-Wing stock to it becoming like, well, now it's more expensive because it no more is being made? Is it still available out there in like secondary markets for a reasonable price?
Not reasonable, but I mean, some stores still have it. A lot of stores were selling it fairly inexpensively. There's still some stores that have it in the back room. There's some stores that have it on the shelf. I was out at Gongai Games and they have a bunch on the shelf still. I just bought a bunch from this store in Canada that had this huge sale, like a fraction. But there's certain ships that never got reprinted with the second edition that were going for like $150.
Yeah.
But 3D printing takes that all away.
That's true. And it does sound like there are ways to get into the hobby still without like breaking the bank to
There's
do it.
There's an amazing group called the X-Wing Alliance that has taken this on. They have several committees of multiple people that they voted in, and they're keeping the game alive. We just got a prize kit for our league, which we do every Wednesday night at the Portland Game Store. I'm really excited for the game. There were 200 players at Worlds, which was more than the other AMG games put together. So I was like, I'm really excited for this game's coming.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So we've been talking about a miniature game. What is miniature gaming?
Yeah, miniature gaming is when you have a miniature that represents something else, right? So like a smaller version of a starship or a little army man or something. And I think it comes from initially from like wargaming, where people would have like Civil War reenactments or World War II or medieval things. And that's where D&D came from, a game called Chainmail, which was they were trying to figure out rules to have these people fight on this field, right? And so you have dice to represent like attacking, you have measurement tools, and the other thing that's amazing, you have terrain, right? X-Wing terrain it's all flat, you know, it's like a little represent cardboard thing of an asteroid. But like Legion and Shatterpoint, these other games have buildings and trees and fountains, and just the terrain is amazing. It looks on the table, it just looks incredible. If you just like Google Star Wars Legion tables, you'll see like every planet imaginable.
So does D&D count as miniature gaming? Because you do have miniatures in D&D.
Yeah, so they call it a tabletop RPG. And a lot of times people will throw a grid out. Like I play online, which we use a virtual one, but we also play in person and we just throw a grid out, and you're having the people move around so many squares they can move and how far they can shoot their arrows or cast their fireball spell, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And like miniature gaming has like a hobby within the hobby of like assembling and painting these terrains and painting the minis and all this other thing. So there's like a whole area in miniature gaming that you can just delve into.
Yeah. That's what I think I mentioned this before also, that X-Wing was the game that it's pre-painted and pre-assembled. And it was like a gateway drug for me. It's like, oh, I don't want to deal with all this. Oh, it's already made. You just buy it, you open a box, you can play it that day. All these other games, you have to go home, cut things off sprues, glue them together, paint them. Most of my stuff's gray, except for when I've gone to big tournaments like the Las Vegas Open or Adepticon for Worlds. They have paint, three-color painting requirements. So everyone goes, oh, you painted some stuff. I go, yeah, because I went to Worlds. You know.
When I was back in England when I was younger, my friend had a birthday party at Games Workshop, and it was Warhammer 40,000, which I think is a miniature game.
Yeah.
And we got to play it there and learn, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. I run. So I like on my birthday, I got a starter kit, and I just ended up putting together and painting the miniatures. That's all I did. I never played it. I just put together and cut out and played, glued them and painted them, and I loved that part. I never played it again.
Do you still have them?
No, this must have been 20 years ago.
Wow. You act like people don't save things, James.
I'm in a different country. You thought I brought these miniatures over?
Yeah, memories. Why do you hate memories?
Because they're dark.
I have games that I've put out and never played. I mentioned this before as well, that I have this game, Samurai Swords, which is something I picked up at Toys R Us, which is like a giant type of Risk game.
We're going to play that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do it.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to do a quick reset here. So you're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate, here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're here talking with Diablo about the culture of miniature gaming and running charity tournaments. So yeah, let's pivot to the tournaments. You've alluded to them already, or directly stated, I guess, about tournaments, but like, what is the tournament scene like?
So Portland has a very robust tournament scene. I played in a tournament, I think, the last three of the four weekends, I believe it has been, or maybe three in a row. It all kind of blends together. I was playing Star Wars X-Wing up at Contrarian Games in Vancouver, Salmon Creek. I played a Shatterpoint tournament out at Gongai Games. And then I played at a store called Glimpses out in Sherwood, Legion, on this last Saturday. So we have a very active and robust tournament scene here locally. People travel for gaming, going up to Canada, going up to Seattle area. I've gone down to the Bay Area, traveled down to Las Vegas a couple times for the Las Vegas Open, which is a big Warhammer tournament. But they also have tons of other games. And then I've gone to Adepticon, which was in Chicago when I went, but now it's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So very robust scene. I haven't organized a tournament since last October. But yeah, we have local play nights. We have X-Wing again at the Portland Game Store on Wednesdays, and a lot of other stores have like game nights for miniatures. So if you just Google that or just call the store, like, do you have a game night? Do you have a miniatures night?
Great. We've tournaments in like other style games, like you might have to train. Is there a way you can train or like get better at miniature playing? And does it involve a montage of 80s music playing in the background?
It could. It really easily could. There's several players that are very serious about their gaming. I'm much more of a what they call a filthy casual. I'm more about the narrative and imagining, like, I'm this character, I'm in this ship or whatever, you know, and I'm like, I really, like, it may not help me to win the game, but I'm gonna attack this other ship. I wanna kill Darth Vader, or I wanna, you know, blow up the Death Star or whatever, you know. But yeah, several people, they'll train, they'll play, they'll start the round, they'll talk about how the ships, you know, eventually engage, and they'll reset, you know. And they'll we actually did this for a couple people that were going to the World's Championship, that we brought these specific lists that they might face at one of our last tournaments, and so that they could get some practice against that. And that was to help them playing against these lists that they're most likely to run across. So yeah, some people can take it very serious. They can train pretty hard. Yeah, I just kind of show up and throw stuff on the table and see what happens.
I love that you're running some like mock games here, just like, to be like, all right, this is what you might face, we got to be prepared. What are the vibes, because there is like sometimes maybe prize money or prizes in general on the line, pride on the line. What are the vibes of the tournaments? Is it like a little more hardcore?
It can be. It depends on the level of the tournament, right? So like a local store tournament, if there's no world's invite on the line, which there was in the last season last year, it would get a little bit sweatier, or people would be a little bit more strict and they wouldn't tell their opponent like, hey, you don't forget this thing. And there are certain players that are a little bit more hardcore. We call them sweaty players, you know, and they really want to win. You could tell that their ego and their identity is tied to winning, right? Whereas like the last couple tournaments I've gone 1-3, 1-2, you know, like win one of, you know, three games. So it depends. The prize money is usually just a little bit of store credit. When you go to bigger tournaments, there's dice on the line, which people really want the dice or other prizes. I think they took a little bit of that out at the last couple worlds, where they have a prize wall, where you have, when you win a game, you get a ticket, or a couple tickets, and you just play, you get a ticket. And so you can always get the prizes, not like certain prizes are for certain people, right? So like, I really want this card, or I really want these dice or this template set. You can save up your things. Like if you go to like, you know, you collect the tickets at the arcade or something.
And I guess, sorry, you said you can win an invite. Can you also just buy in to go, or like is basically winning an invite, they just cover the cost of you being in the tournament?
So the invite system, they didn't do it this year, but last year they did it, and they had all these local store championships that if you won those, you would get an invite to the world's invite. And if you won a bigger one, they called them grand tournaments, or I forget what they call them. They had larger tournaments. If you were they had the top four would get to go, but the top person would get a flight and hotel. So those were way more competitive because there's a lot more on the line. Especially, we had tons of people from all over the world. We had people from Germany and England and Poland and Spain, France. This year, I think they were joking that it wasn't really worlds because we had people from England, Canada, and the U.S. because they didn't have that, right? And it didn't inspire. Like one of your friends in England wins a ticket to Worlds, you kind of bring your friends along. So they just had this huge entourage. And so there's an open system now, and they also had an open on those other years where you show up and play, and if you win, then you can get into the grand championship. So, but this year is all open, anyone can show up and play.
Awesome. Is there ever a problem with gatekeeping in the miniature, especially in the tournaments? Because you mentioned like the sweaty gamers that can be hardcore, and I feel like they might try and they have a problem with other people playing, or maybe problems with, I know there's sometimes in these games factions, that you can have different factions in these games.
Yeah.
Is there ever a problem like that, and how do you maybe combat it in the tournament leagues?
So tournament is different because there's certain rules you have to follow. You have to have the certain cards, which a lot of that's print and play now. and certain models, they have to be a certain amount of plastic. But when I first started playing, I would show up at stores locally just for the local game night or league night, and people were like, you can't play that unless you buy the card. I'm like, I'm not spending $100 on this ship to get Emperor Palpatine. I'm playing this card, and if you don't want to play me, then I'll play someone else. And I really tried to shift the vibe locally to be more friendly and opening and open and not be so gatekeepy, right? And now, especially with X-Wing not having any printed stuff, anyone can play. They could play anything. You could just play with an empty base if you had to, right? Not having to have a ship on it. So that's cloaked. Yeah, so there is some gatekeeping. Some of it's of necessity because of the rules for larger tournaments. But locally, for casual play nights, it's pretty open. Like, I proxy stuff all the time.
Yeah, and I do think the hobby in general is moving to a more open space where a lot of, like, the gatekeeping issues are, like, breaking down, which I'm happy about. I'm going on the record. I am happy that more people are able to play board games and feel comfortable doing so.
There's so many opportunities. You can go online and find stuff on Meetup or just at local game store nights you could show up and play.
So you're running a charity tournament here in May. So what? Why don't you tell us about that? And what goes into organizing a charity tournament?
So for years, one of my favorite things in X-Wing was the campaign against cancer, and it was run by a guy named Chad Hoffel, and he had dozens and dozens of stores for many years all across the U.S. that raised almost $250,000 for the Cancer Association and St. Jude's, American Cancer Society and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. And it was my favorite things because people weren't sweaty at those things. You know, they're coming here and they're supporting and doing that. So there's a lot of different levels of organizing. And so I wanted to carry that forward, talk to a local game store, Portland Game Store, and said, hey, I want to do a benefit tournament. We used to do the campaign against cancer. And I gave them like a dozen places. Like, here's this, this is a social justice movement. This is a women's shelter. And one of these places was You Can Do, which I call Ukandu because it sounds like a Star Wars planet, right? And so we did this, and we just said, hey, we're going to raise some money for you. We raised $2,000 for them, which our goal at that time was $1,500, which sends a child to a medically supervised summer camp, right? And they were blown away. They're like, what? This is awesome. There's a lot of moving parts, right? You have to organize with the store. You have to get the players. You have to deal with the tournament software. You have to know how that works because how pairings and all that, who wins the tournament is based on that. You can do it by hand, but it's really challenging. A lot of math. So, and so the store chose this cancer society, this cancer camp, and it's Ukandu or You Can Do, and it's a childhood cancer. They said that the cancer journey impacts each member of the family. And that the impact is real, whether it's a parent, sibling, or the child or the patient. And they also said that the cancer journey never ends, and it doesn't end when the child rings the bell after their final chemo treatment. It doesn't end when the child dies. And so this organization, You Can Do, offers community and connection year-round holistic care, including mental health support. I'm a mental health counselor. I always appreciate that. And for each member of the family, all free of charge. So, yeah, I'm really glad that the store wanted to do it again. I reached out to them, and I said, hey, do you want to do another one? They said, yes. And so just trying to find a date. You know, I've been talking to them since October about trying to, like, figure out a date. And they have so many card games and other events going on that it's challenging to find a date. But we found this one, so we're going to do it.
Yeah, it's always amazing to me how much board game stores offer to the community. Like, their schedules are so packed with stuff. And again, just, it's amazing, like, how much of a community space they are.
I feel like it helps crumble down the stereotype as well, because you don't think of, like, gaming, people in gaming to help out charities, but now the stuff is happening, it's great.
Yeah, I like the term benefit tournament versus charity. Charity sounds and also just like you're gaming for a cause, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting to play something fun, but you're also helping out, you know. And I just want to mention the website. So if you want to find out more about it, you can go to www.ukandu.org. And hopefully we'll get a link on there that'll be specific for that tournament.
I'll add that to the web post.
Okay,
for
cool.
This, later. So do you have to, like, form relationships with publishers to secure prizes? Like, How do you go about building up the funds for the benefit?
Yeah, the last one, people were so inspired by this. They donated tons of money and prizes. Like someone donated this dice that everyone really wanted. Like, hey, I'm giving my dice to you guys. And people were like, oh my gosh, I want to play. I want to join. I want to just donate to get a raffle ticket for it. So I'm going to reach out to Atomic Mass Games and see if they have, you know, because the game has been sunset. Like, hey, do you want to donate to this? I also reached out to Chad, and he might send some prize support, he said. He's the one that ran Campaign Against Cancer. So hopefully that will inspire people to come and play.
I have a question real quick. Yeah. It's like totally nonsense because that's what I do. You know, I'm not a miniature gamer. What is it about dice that has them so... people covet them so much?
Because they're so pretty. Dice are so pretty.
There are some pretty ones. You know, it's just they're different. You know, they're like math rocks. You know, they're not D6s, which is like the standard dice you see everywhere. I was thinking about that with the samurai swords. Like that was one of the first games that I saw that had a D10 in it. I'm like, wow, this is weird. So they're unique. They just show like, hey, I won something. I got this. My dice are a different color. Like some people show up and it's kind of their bling. Like they're throwing all that. Oh my gosh, you have dice from like the last 10 years of every major championship.
That's awesome. I do have a friend who travels. We just play Euro games, but he travels with a bag of dice because he uses them for a start player. So he has like those ones with, I don't even understand them. They have random numbers on them and it goes up to 40, but it's not like every number. It's not a 40-sided die, but just and you roll them to see who gets the highest one, which is just, you know, that's just the way he likes to do it.
I love that.
It's fun. But yeah, maybe it's just people just like chucking stuff around and fiddling with things too.
It's the physicality of these things. You know, like one of the reasons I came down here is I wanted to see you guys and be in the same space and the same air, not only sound quality. And that's the thing about gaming versus video gaming. I love video gaming, but being with another person across the table is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you were able to come down. This has been great.
Thank you so much. We love it.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up here now. We actually had a little bit extra time that I noticed partway through.
Okay.
If you heard paper rattling, it's because I passed a note saying, oh, we can go a little bit longer.